Hello.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi there. Would you like to drink some beer?
Yes, I would like to drink some beer. It's been 2 weeks. We know Jeff has been very busy.
Last weekend was a bit crazy. I worked 27 hours on Saturday. Yes, 27.
And normally 24 hours in a day, right? Normally.
Yes. Well, how about 27 hours between sleep?
Okay.
And of those 27, I probably spent 24 of them standing.
Good exercise.
Pretty exhausting.
Mm.
I don't think I've ever... I think it really redefined exhaust. You know, anytime I've used exhausted previously in my life, it's been hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
This is truly exhausted.
Well, it makes for interesting storytelling. So why don't you tell us this story?
Okay, well, it starts out, I work for a high-tech company, everyone knows that. We have a co-located data center, it's our engineering and test lab. As being that it's not production, you know, not five nines uptime type stuff, but a production or a engineering and test lab, we're able to move it in a forkload type move, where we shut the whole thing down, unrack it, load it on the trucks, take it to the new place, hook it back up, and that's what we had to do because... our old colo provider didn't like us anymore. Mm. We were making too much hot air. And they weren't equipped to handle us. So, basically...
the Jeff Bear policy.
Basically, they kicked us out. The contractor we knew
was
unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, basically, they kicked us out. So, we moved to the new place.
That's a good one.
Mm. Drinking the Goes from Westbrook. Goza from Westbrook. So went to the new place. The lab is much bigger than we moved 3 years ago. We moved the lab, and this time it was a lot bigger, a lot more complex. I think I underestimated a little bit how much more complex it was in the planning and whatnot. But things went fairly well. We've talked about some things that we could have done better, but really, I don't hope to get really good at moving colos. Mm. Moving labs.
Yeah.
There's better things to get
good
at. It's
good to have that on your resume, right?
There's better things to be good at than moving labs. So hopefully this is the last time we have to do this, unless we decide to bring all that stuff in-house. And at that point, it would be a phased-in approach.
Yeah.
We'd never have to do this kind of forklift thing again.
Of course, then you have to manage power and air and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, we're using... 80 kilowatts?
Yeah.
The co-location center we moved to, it's relatively new. A little over half the floor is empty. And they were using about 110 kW. And when we came in and turned our stuff on, it went up by another 80. So they're 190 kW now. Actually got to use some of their additional chilling capacity for the first time. The new chillers kicked on when we moved in.
So. I wonder if the problem that you had with your... with the chillers... cause them to decide to give you a different, you know, to say, look, well, if we can't support them anymore, they're overtaxing our...
Oh, at the old place?
Yeah.
At the old place, they actually already had to bring in a portable unit. They've been using a portable unit for the last year and a half to cool practically half of our stuff by itself. So...
This is where the servers on sidewalks thing truly does work.
Yeah. Greg had a dream a long time ago about our sidewalk server at Nautica.
Right. The server room, for some reason, was out on the sidewalk. And, you know, it was silly at the time. But then I actually read a story, I think a couple of years ago, about Google essentially doing that. Because it's a lot cheaper to cool them with the atmosphere than it is to stick them in a room and have to cool that.
Yeah, they have basically, like... not literally in the middle of the sidewalk, but like off the sidewalk, between the sidewalk and the building.
They're outdoor servers, essentially.
And there's places that you can buy containers that are data centers. Mm-hmm. You know, so you could have a whole containerized data center trucked to your site, plugged in, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of more innovative things than there were back in 1998, 99, when we were working back at Nautica, when you had the dream about the sidewalk server that was getting rained on.
So Jeff had to take, you know, do all that work, and then he warned me. I don't know if we mentioned on the show, but he did warn me that there may not be a show.
I said, you know, I'll either be very much in the mood to do a show or in no way in the mood to do a show. And since I didn't get home till 7 in the morning, Sunday morning, you can guess which one that was.
Right. I texted him, I think. Yeah, I texted him on Saturday. I said, are we doing a show? I said, nope. All right. I then kept asking during the week if he wanted to do a show, but we never got around to it, unfortunately. So
Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I went to bed at 8 o'clock. Thursday was the day I actually mentioned to you, and Heather demanded some attention, so... Not you know.
Like I said,
I don't mean to make that sound bad. Heather needed some attention, mm-hmm. especially since last Saturday, the day I worked all day, was her birthday.
Oh.
So, you know, she demanded some attention, and
that is tough.
Happy to give it to her. And,
in more ways than one, I'm sure. Wah, 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 wah.
Not on that night. I think the next morning. But anyway.
Well, the kids were playing.
And before they get up. So I'm about caught up now. But then yesterday, I was going to work from home, cut out after a few hours, and one of our key servers had a hard drive fail, right? Uh-huh. From the stress of the move. I mean, this is server 7 years old. It hasn't been powered off in 3, right? Powered off. Take a 7-year-old hard drive, power it off, put it on a bumpy truck across town.
Yes.
Plug it back in. Things are going to fail. We haven't had a ton of hard drive failures, but there's been a few. We actually had... There's a certain build of server we have. Cheap, not very important, just Linux client-type servers, but we just buy the cheapest things we could. And 3 of those power supplies all went. They wouldn't turn back on. It's kind of unusual. You don't really expect power supplies to fail from a move type situation.
They're probably cheap power supplies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, whenever these computers break, I mean, these computers are, you know, 5 years past warranty and they're only like $1,200 to start, right? Mm-hmm. Not expensive computers. So yeah, we're like, whatever, replace them.
Yeah. But depreciation on them is well past.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, enough technical nonsense about Jeff stuff. Let's go into technical nonsense about relativity. Because I listened back to our explanation, and Jeff and I getting into questions about it, legitimate questions, mm-hmm. and I realized that I explained it poorly, and we both kind of did ourselves a disservice by not really thinking about the situation well enough beforehand, before mm-hmm. we started to talk about it. So I really did a lot of thinking. I actually did a little bit of math just to make sure I was saying the right thing and sort of realized where the problem was in what we were doing when we were trying to think about it. And the problem was we weren't really considering the true nature of relativity.
Okay.
So let me explain to you what I mean. I wrote down a nice big document, and so I'll skim through it and tell you what it says here. So this is the thing that we wanted to, or I wanted to try to get across, was when you consider relativity, FTL becomes impossible, or at least it causes such great problems with causality that there's mm-hmm. no way to resolve it. So to understand where we went wrong, you have to understand what relativity tells us in the first place, because the reason FTL is impossible is all related to relativity. Remember that the core ideas are that the core precepts are physics are the same in every inertial reference frame, and there is one invariant, and that's C. So no matter what reference frame you're in, speed of light always gets seen as going at mm-hmm. C, and the physics from every single inertial reference frame is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the strange effects that we then associate with relativity, the things like time dilation and length contraction, these occur because C is measured at the same speed from every reference frame. Therefore, things outside, time and length outside the considered reference frame are forced to become variable. because one, because there is an invariant. The other things become variable. So the most important stumbling block that we had was we attempted to explain the paradoxes. We forgot about relativity of simultaneity. That was our biggest problem. So what that means is two observers in different reference frames can disagree about the order of events they witnessed, mm-hmm. but still they're both correct. The easiest example I can give you is someone who's in between the Earth and the Moon on a ship, mm-hmm. and they see two lights. See, that's going to make noise. Mm-hmm. They see two lights, one on the Earth, one on the Moon, flash at the same time. Mm-hmm. But the person who's at by the light on the Moon sees his light go off, and the guys on Earth lights go off later, and the guys on Earth sees his light go off, mm-hmm. and the Moon. Mm-hmm. Which one is correct? Well, they're all correct. They're just in different references. Mm-hmm. So,
but none of that is, you know, none of that hurts your head, right? Because yeah. it's still all very simple word I can't think of now. It's intuitive. That's it, yeah. right? Because, I mean, as soon as someone tells you that light isn't instantaneous and it travels like sound, everyone has seen. I remember the first time I really noticed the speed of sound. Mm-hmm. I was in intermediate high school, and it was on the football field. We were at one end of the football field, and there was a dude with a sledgehammer driving a post into the other end of the football field. And you could see him hitting the post, right? And the sound was offset, right? Mm-hmm. And I was surprised. It was the first time I had noticed that delay, you know? And I was surprised at how much delay there was at only the length of a football field. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, really, that's the first time I actually, you know, it's a very interesting moment in my life because, like, hey, that's the speed of sound, yeah. you know, the speed of light's faster type thing. Like, whoa.
But even the speed of light has a speed.
Right.
And that's why just a light can be viewed as coming in different places. Mm-hmm. And relativity simultaneity basically means that both, yeah, any reference frame can be correct about how they're seeing something, mm-hmm. but they can disagree about when things happen. So the thing I would say, see, all three versions are correct because according to special relativity, there is no privileged reference frame. The observers at each position will have to exchange information in order to figure out an agreed upon space-time description of events. But that will be trivial once they are all in each other's light cone. And if you remember your relativity, your light cone essentially branches off from you. And if you can have... If you're not inside of the light cone, then you can't influence events inside of that light cone from that perspective of where that light cone emanates from. It's a little complicated, but just do a light cone lookup and you'll see. Mm-hmm. Remember, it looks like that.
Right.
That's your light cone.
Right, right.
This is the future. This is the future. This is the past. And just... So these two events, you'd be able to find out this one couldn't influence anything in here.
And the observers at the apex.
The observers at the apex, right. Yeah. So in other words, they communicate, once they communicate to each other at the speed of light or slower, that's when they can start to agree with each other. Mm-hmm. So let's consider a part of the FTL problem without invoking FTL. Okay? Let's assume for the sake of the argument that you have two probes mm-hmm. that accelerate away from each other at high speed, 0.89c, let's say. Mm-hmm. And they will stop their engines after a specific time, let's say 1,000 seconds. Okay. Let's name these two probes Alex and Betty, A and B. Okay. So, in the middle, there's a point C where they both start from. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, let's follow Alex's perspective. He observes himself to begin to accelerate before Betty.
Right.
Right. From his perspective, he begins before Betty. Since he only has his reference frame to consider, it's unclear relativistically if point C and Betty are accelerating away from him at considerably high speeds, or if he's doing the acceleration himself.
Right. Well, I mean, there's nothing remaining at point C, right?
Right. Right. But well, let's say there was like a little station at point C, like a little
right.
little pole, you know. Well, at that point, knows the acceleration, but
no, at that point, he would be able to observe that Betty is he's accelerating away from Betty at twice the speed he's.
No, he knows away he. From I mean, he knows he pre-pressed the accelerator, but if he was just a bug on his ship that didn't know anything,
right.
he would see point C and point B start to accelerate away from him, and he's standing still.
Sure.
That's what I'm basically saying, is that it doesn't matter mm-hmm. which one is moving, which one isn't, from a relative standpoint. He's essentially always staying still, and everything else is moving. So he notices time run more slowly from his perspective. Carlos's clock will be moving slow, and Betty's clock is further moves still. His time, as he sees it, is always is running the same mm-hmm. as it always has for him. Carlos starts running slower. Betty starts running even slower. In addition, the direction in which he is moving will be distorted such as to be shrunk in the direction of his acceleration, which Carlos and Betty will... and Carlos and Betty will be deformed and lengthwise in a similar manner. That's just length contraction.
Right, right.
So he'll see his distance to a target become smaller, or to where he's going become smaller, distances become smaller along his axis right. of moving, and he'll see Carlos shrink in lengthwise, and he'll see Betty shrink lengthwise.
Won't they lengthen?
No. Because they are, from his perspective, moving. And they're going to shrink. It's like the train moving through the tunnel, and you're sitting outside the tunnel. If the train is going fast enough, the train appears to shrink. If something's moving, it appears to shrink in that direction that it's moving. It appears to shrink along that axis that it's moving.
So if it's moving at high speeds, it's going to take... Okay, I think. I was thinking that it was going to be a situation where the light from the front of the ship would take longer than the light from the back of the ship, so it would... Would shrink it. I'll take your word for it.
It's a smaller thing to consider. It's mm-hmm. it's not really. If you just want to consider the clocks, that's fine. Just consider the clocks. The clocks are moving slower mm-hmm. from the perspective of Alex, right? Okay. Alex should find himself reaching his required time faster from his perspective than both Carlos and Betty experience their time. Their clocks are slower. His clock is moving fine. He will get to the 1,000 seconds before Carlos and Betty count 1,000 seconds on their clocks from his perspective.
Right, from his perspective. Right.
Therefore, from his perspective, he will stop first. From his perspective, Betty will not have completed her trip. This is a valid perspective because until they communicate by being within each other's light cone, no extra information can be received.
The point, sure, I mean, from observation, but the point that I was getting hung up on, is...
Let me finish, because okay. this might answer your question. Now consider this same thing from Betty's perspective. Betty sees exactly the inverse of what Alex sees. Betty sees that she starts first.
Well, sure.
Betty sees right. that Carlos and Alex are moving away from her, and that Alex is moving slower, his clock is moving slower than Carlos's, which is moving slower than her clock. And she sees her getting to her 1,000 seconds before Betty and Carlos, before Alex and Carlos count 1,000 seconds on their clocks.
All right. I think the thing I was getting hung up on, and I'm still getting hung up on, is that both Alex and Betty are captains of super fast spaceships, and they have had basic physics, and they understand this dilation, and they know that the other person's seeing the same thing.
Well, that's fine.
Okay.
It doesn't make a difference.
When you turn around and shoot your tachyon cannon back at them, you know that you both fired off at the same time, if you've gone the same speed, if you've had the same acceleration. If they were in equal ships.
It doesn't matter. From your point of observation... Your frame is correct.
Well, right, but
I mean, their frame doesn't become correct to you until they reach your light cone. You have to be able to exchange information, otherwise,
okay,
the two frames are not in sync. There is no way for them to be in sync.
All right, but you can anticipate that Betty has fired her cannon at you, and you just haven't. The light hasn't reached you yet, but it's coming. because that was the rules of the game.
I'm trying to simplify the explanation enough. So okay. I'm making it probes. There's nobody on board. It's just probes. Okay. All right. There's all nobody right. consider it. There's none of this extra stuff. I'm just okay. making it trying to be very, okay. very simple. Okay. All right. So Carlos, so from the point of perspective of Carlos, Carlos sees both of them move off at the same time mm-hmm. and from his perspective, stop at the same time.
Right.
His perspective is also valid. So now let's add the FTL wrinkle. And then for simplicity's okay. sake, we will assume the FTL transmission is instantaneous. The reason why I'm making this is just because mm-hmm. it makes it simple.
Okay.
It, right. The same consequences can happen even when FTL is just slightly faster than C, but okay. It just requires more complicated math and more thinking to understand, to come to the exact same conclusion ultimately.
Okay.
So let's consider the probes have a special mechanism that says if they reach, they receive an FTL signal from the other drone, they will send out an FTL signal in return and then shut down prematurely. Okay? It's like the tachyon pistol. They instead of blowing up, right. they just shut down. It's simpler this
okay. way. Right. So they send an instantaneous signal back.
Right.
And shut down.
And shut down. Otherwise, if they get to their 1,000 second threshold, they'll send out an FTL signal and shut down at that point. Okay, so if they reach the end,
okay,
then they'll shut down. But if they get a signal, they'll send back a signal and shut down before that.
Okay.
Okay.
So then what you're going to say is Alex hits his 10,000 seconds first and sends his signal and shuts down. From his perspective, Betty receives at 8,000 seconds. Then the inverse is same on the other side. I don't see how that... So the thing is, okay, so from his perspective, he sent a signal to 80% Betty instead uh-huh. of 100% Betty. He shuts down. So you're saying Betty gets the signal at 80%.
Sends
but
back
that's,
a signal.
But that's not her frame of reference.
It doesn't matter. Because if you assume the FTL, then you have to assume that his perspective is correct because information is now being transmitted. So once you make that assumption, it is necessary that Betty then receives it at from Carlos's perspective. From Alex's perspective.
Sees, so you could go even further, right?
So just think about that.
Because Betty sends back a Pong, right? So you could say that Carlos doesn't shut down until after he gets the Pong, right? So, or maybe he has a secondary subsystem, something, right? Right. So he does ping pong. He gets a ping, he sends a ping, gets a Pong.
No, well, just to think about that. Okay, say Alex reaches a point, sends out a ping to Betty. Yeah. Betty hasn't reached her point. Betty shuts down and sends out a ping, but from Betty's perspective, Alex hasn't reached even the point where you know if but, Betty's at 8,000 then Alex is at 6,000.
I'm having hard times reconciling Betty's perspective, right? I mean from I'm working through Alex's side. Alex sends out a thing at 10 seconds. He sends a ping, he gets an instant Pong back and he observes Betty at 8 seconds, right?
No.
He observes Betty's clock at only being 8 of the 10 seconds.
Well, the problem is that once he sends the FTL to Betty, he would receive a Pong back from Betty before he had sent out his FTL.
How do you?
That's the problem.
How?
Because
explain to me that. Try to give me that one.
Okay, so A reaches the point,
mm-hmm.
sends a signal to Betty.
Right.
Betty gets a signal, sends it back, but to Betty, A is still back here, sends it back this way. So the signal comes back to Alex before Alex has reached the point where he sends out the signal to Betty. It bounces back.
I
this gets canceled out, but wait a minute, how can she send it here if it's there?
You're still not describing the part we got hung up with last time.
And consider that Betty sees the same thing. Betty reaches her point before Alex does, and so she sends a signal back to Alex.
How does it come back before he sends it? It should come back at the exact same time.
Because which perspective is valid? Which perspective is correct?
If you're looking at... Each one sees the inverse, right? But you... No part of this problem needs to reconcile both.
Yes, it does, because you're sending information. That was the point of me bringing up the thing without FTL. One, you can reconcile with each other once you get inside a light cone and you're sending information. Once you don't have that ability, then suddenly you don't you can't say that each reference frame is independent. All of a sudden, it just mucks up the works completely. Alex gets Betty's signal before he sent out his signal that told Betty to send out her signal. How can this happen?
I don't understand that. I don't see how you drew that conclusion. I don't. That's the part I don't see. Alex sends a ping, gets an instantaneous pong back. Right. I mean, from his frame of reference, it gets there, turn instant, gets back to him in an instant. No matter where she is, right?
Okay.
So if you're just looking from if you are on
what
Alex's ship,
right?
And you could send out this faster than light ping.
Uh-huh.
And you would expect you ping Betty, it comes back in an instant. You know, that's you're only that's just what you're observing from your frame of reference here. And yeah, sure, Betty. The same thing would happen to Betty from her side.
The point
I
is,
I don't see where
if you send it to Betty,
uh-huh.
and remember, there's no privileged reference frames. You uh-huh. send it to Betty, then Betty sends it back to you, the same way that you send it to her, which is back in time for her.
Yeah, but you're switching over to Betty, where.
Well, I'm saying that Betty. If Betty sends an FTL signal as well, then it's going to go back in time the way yours did for her. It's right. going to necessarily
but
go back in
but
time.
But what I'm picturing is...
Because FTL causes back in time transmission.
Is this, right? Now you have... So, I mean, unless you're trying to get them back together, I don't see how it's flat out broken, right? Because Alex is over here in his universe now, and Betty's over here in her universe.
It's flat out broken because when Alex sends it to Betty, Betty sends it back to Alex. But because Alex has went back in time to Betty, Betty's will go back in time to Alex, and Alex will receive the signal before he sent out the signal. It's the way it works.
Okay. I don't...
You want me to do the math?
I want you to explain it better.
Hold on a second. I mean, the reason why it's busting your mind is because it's impossible.
So,
consider that Betty sees the same thing as Alex does, right? From Betty's perspective, she'd reach her side uh-huh, first,
right.
send it to Alex, and what, she's going to receive a ping back?
Right.
How can they both be valid?
Because they're different, and now... So, I think we're, the problem where I'm... giving the possibility and then later on throwing the invalidity is, I think, if you just stick on one frame of reference, right? You can send an instant ping, you get an instantaneous ping back, right? They both see that, right?
Right.
The problem is when you try to get back together and reconcile that.
Right.
Right. Because it's almost it's almost Schrodinger's cat at that point, right? Because they're both separate independent reference frames that haven't, they've only observed
their own reference frame.
Their own reference frame. And because we're talking about a faster than light ping, you know, it's this, might have to put some more thought into information, right? Because I'm just picturing this, and I'm picturing the cannonball as the rules were prearranged beforehand, right?
Right.
So I can, it makes sense to me where, you know, you can have this instantaneous tachyon ping pong, and it only, but it only makes sense from one frame of reference or the other, right? You can't
combine those two things.
Right. And I think maybe what you're, maybe if in this story a long time ago we started talking about them looping back around and getting back together, you know, maybe that's where I see it breaking, right? Where it's a lot harder to reconcile that kind of thing. But like, you know, you got Alex over here, like I ripped the paper in half, right? Because you have Alex over here and he sees his observation and Betty sees her observation. And they're both the same but inverse observation. If they continue on their merry way out into foreverdom, there's nothing that...
They're causally disconnected from each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of why I said Schrodinger's cat, right? Mm-hmm. It's indeterminate at this point, you know?
Sort of, right.
Maybe I'm not using the right words, but...
But once they get into a situation where they are causally connected, suddenly... which one is valid breaks the other one.
Yeah, right.
They each break each other's.
That's the part you never explained, talked about. That's the part I needed to... And I'm not going to argue strenuously against that, right? I get it, you know? It was the... We talked about moments of the interaction.
Right.
Right?
Well, that was, you know, it was at the end of mine, consider it from her perspective, and now try to bring them both together. Now they don't make sense. That is sort of the fundamental point that they'll is that once you bring them together, now what the heck is going on? This is
where, don't have a problem with that. So all of that.
I'm glad. Well, that's good. That helps me when I'm trying to explain it to other people to know what is the point to focus on.
Yeah, I think it's getting the pieces back together. Mm-hmm. You know. Because while they're separate, while they're not reconnected, right? They're separate universes.
Right.
Right? They're separate timelines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't see in that in its own breaking.
And it probably doesn't until they suddenly get to be in the same universe, in the same space-time. And then it all falls apart.
Now, I'd have to put some more thought into, so, like I said before, a ping pong or shooting a tachyon cannon, it seems like just a binary signal type thing, right? And we talk about sending information. And I know a physicist can tell me it's the same damn thing, right? Mm-hmm. But it might help be more intuitive if there was some kind of work to be done type thing. Like... You're giving me this weird look, but just hear me out here, right?
Okay.
Because, again, we talked about...
Well, there's work to be done in receiving a signal.
Right.
You're exciting an antenna.
Oh, yeah, but we're talking about magical signals here.
No, we're not. This is not magic.
Faster than life magical signals. We're talking... You're talking about switching the antenna and switching equipment that can process the signal instantaneously and send the pong out at at the same instant, right? You're not.
Oh, so you're having the problem with it being instantaneous. Well, I mean, well, all you have
not
to do
so much
is
that. I'm saying if we're assuming it's instantaneous, then you know you can't talk about
just
work to receive the signal on the antenna.
Just remember 1 minus v squared over c squared. Apply it. That's all you got to do.
Whatever that means.
That's your gamma. That's your Lorentz factor. When you're doing relativistic calculation.
Okay.
It's relativistic time dilation. That's why you just apply that. That's why I said the math gets complicated.
Right.
That's how you differentiate between two different frames.
Okay. All right.
But it's really ultimately it becomes a problem for reality. It becomes a problem for an agreed upon reality.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the point. What I was trying to get to was, and maybe this would help with the Intuit part, right, is the, like I said, for me, the binary signal off until it's on type thing, right? You know, not fire until you fire type thing. Since it's prearranged, you're expecting a specific signal, you know, this whole faster than light ping pong kind of doesn't seem that hard, right? Where if it was something that was, now, granted, I know you're going to argue against this, but I'm just talking about trying to intuit this, right? And that is, if it was something more informational, something that required work to process type.
Okay, well, consider
it. Like stock tips, or, you know, a math problem, or factor this, you know, prime, you know, that kind of thing.
Consider the tachyon bullet scenario, where mm-hmm. instead of just sending a signal and shutting down, it's a bullet mm-hmm. that right. goes faster than light and actually destroys
right.
the other entity. Mm-hmm. Okay? So A and B both agree that they will fire the bullet at the other
right.
person.
They both destroy the other ship
they first. They both destroy the other ship first. Whose perspective is right?
They're both right until they get back together. And that's the part we missed last week.
Yeah. Well, they're both right until suddenly until C comes along and joins them. And then, what the hell's going on?
Right, right. But they're not also, you know, C has his own third frame, right? Where they both died at the same
time.
Well,
when I would say C, I mean little C. I mean until the speed of light gets between them. Right? Because if they're only going 1,000 seconds or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever speed they're going, right. C will eventually, there will eventually be a light cone where they're both in the same.
Well, sure. So,
so if A was right and B was right.
So this is back to the part of the diagram. So we're talking, okay, so there's the, I don't know if I want to beat this horse anymore, but this is kind of the diagram.
Pause the show if you don't want to beat it on the podcast.
Okay, I just want to cover one more thing, but I don't want to do it on the air. Sorry if you're enthralled with this conversation.
I love it.
No, I mean the people that, I'm going to pause this and keep them out of this conversation. Maybe we don't want to do that, but it's a picture. So maybe let me draw the picture and then we can get back on. All right. Turns out my picture was not necessary. I was very hung up with the not joining the pieces back together mm-hmm. and reconciling all the observations, because to me, you know, these things were heading apart. One blew up, doesn't exist anymore. So I guess whose frame of reference wins?
Right.
Well, they both do, right? But I guess you have two universes where two people are living, right? And then if they get back together, it's just like time travel, man. It's just like all kinds of...
Yeah, it just fucks everything up.
Yep.
Okay. It totally mucks up the works.
Sure.
Well, I'm glad we got that covered. Whatever, man. It's a lot of thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I spent a lot of time figuring out why it was that... Because I knew it was supposed to happen, but... Your logic was sound when you were refuting me.
Right.
And I just had to figure out why. And it took me some thinking.
You want to talk about the Kinkajou?
Yeah.
So, we were talking about cutting bottles on the show a while ago. I got through all these bottles. There's some nice souvenirs we get, especially the silkscreen bottles. And I was looking online, and there's like on Pinterest and stuff, there's people, they soak a piece of string in lighter fluid, tie it around the bottle, light it, and then they douse it in water, right? But they make some pretty ugly cracks and whatnot. So then I started trying to make a jig where the bottle would actually sit in it and have a etcher and try to turn the bottle on it and stuff like that. I didn't really get the jig complete. I didn't have much success with it. Someone tweeted me this last week about this Kickstarter. It's called a Kinkajou. It's a South American animal with really sharp teeth. So that's what they named this for. But it's this clamp. And you can look it up online. But it clamps around the bottle. It has rollers. And it has a scoring thing you can drop down on the bottle. So you put this on. You turn the bottle. You score a line around it. Then they give you these two... I don't think I brought them down. They're these silicone rubber bands. Like really big bands. And they're the separation bands. And what you do there is you put it on... You put it on both sides of the score and leave... half an inch, right? And what it does is it helps direct the water. So then you take boiling water and you pour it on the score, and the bands are like here and here, right? So it's just a little alleyway where the water gets hot. So you pour it until you get the glass nice and hot, and then you pick up your pitcher of ice water and you pour ice water on it. And then you just take the neck and you just give it a little twist, and it just because comes
the,
right off.
The glass will expand when it gets hot, and then you'll shock it back when it gets cold, and you'll be able to.
And so the first one I did here was this Unibrew Kuklichos bottle. And when I did this one, I was holding the Kinkajou in one hand and the bottom of the ball in the other hand and turning it. And it drifted probably about a 16th of an inch or so. And the drift was actually right here, and I sanded it down. But, you know, so there was a little imperfection here where it cut, dropped down a little bit low. So it didn't ruin the souvenir or anything, but it's also not very pretty. So today I had the idea of putting the Kinkajou in a vise so I could turn the bottle with both hands. And that helped out a lot. First one I scored was this AleSmith bottle. I haven't sanded it or anything yet, but it's a really, it's a pretty good, it's a little bit sanding. It'll be really nice. There's no dips or anything on it. And then the second one I did was this Stone 10th Anniversary glass I really didn't want to break. And it really, it's freaking perfect. Really, really good stuff. I broke the Enjoy By bottle because I had the Kinkajou too tight. So when I was scoring it, I was also flexing the bottle, so crack the bottle while I was scoring it. So don't do that.
And how much did that cost?
It's about, here, let me look it up. There were, I think it was, I paid almost close to $50 with shipping and whatnot. I figured part of it was Craft Beer Radio's, you know, product evaluation, you know, for listeners. So I was happy to spend the money. And I don't know. I think these are more useful than keeping a bunch of bottles
yes.
on the shelf.
Yeah,
use them as pen holders. You could use them as cups. Comes with sandpaper, too, so you sand the thing down and turn it into a nice edge.
It takes some work, obviously. It's not, you know, instant, but it does what it's supposed to do. It creates these cups, and these cups then can be very useful. So it's not just, so you're, and I said to Jeff before, you're respecting the glass in a way. You're not just, you know, you're saying, okay, I got something great out of this glass, I'm going to turn it into something great in addition. It's cool. It's cool to have them around. The one problem we have is that we don't have a lot of silkscreen bottles.
Yeah, the ones I had, I only have like three of them right now. I broke the one. I had four. I broke one. We have a couple Coronados in there, silkscreen, and a few others. So actually, I broke the one Coronado, the island, or the sock knocker. That was when I tried using my own personal jig, where I wrote it, made a jig, and I was using the Dremel to score it. That didn't work very well. The Kinkajou, okay, so it was $49.99, and that one comes with, see these little blue rings here? Those are the separation things I was talking about. Comes with a little glass nipper. If you get a little high spot, you can just kind of break it off with that, and some sandpaper. Then they have the Deluxe and the Premium, and it comes with more sandpaper, and the Premium comes with glass paint and stencils. So you can take a plain bottle and you can stencil it with glass paint. If you want to, you know, save bottles, it takes a little bit of practice, but put the Kinkajou in a vise, and if you get results like I did on this Stone 10th Anniversary glass, you'll be very happy. They show that you can cut the bottoms off the bottles and make pendant lights, like, you know, put a light bulb up in there and make a lamp out of your bottles. You can do different things. They don't all have to be cups.
That's pretty neat. Okay. Let me, I don't know if you caught my tweets last night.
I don't think I did.
I was tweeting about, the Book of Job.
Okay.
I've said before that I find the Bible to be a fascinating piece of literature. I particularly think the Old Testament is a lot more interesting than the New Testament, mostly because the Old Testament has all the really great stories, and the New Testament kind of, it's not as good a story as far as I'm concerned. It feels a little cheap. But the Job story is particularly interesting, and I think that if you look at it simply, you know, if you take out all the supernatural nonsense and look at it simply as allegory, there's something, as with any great work of literature, there's something kind of profound in there. You know the story of Job, right? I don't have to repeat it. Job is tested by God by being, you know, by getting all the things that he loves taken away from him, and yet he still you still believe them. But that's kind of the silliness. But let's look at it from Job's perspective. What is Job doing? There is the point where Job argues with God. That's really where I think the meat of the story is. God says back to him, did you create all this? Did you do all this? What are you to me? You know, what is that really saying? Job is screaming at the universe, I don't like it. I don't like what's going on. I don't like this situation I find myself in. And the universe is screaming back at him in deafening terms, tough shit. You are not the storyteller. It's not your story. You're part of a bigger thing. You're part of something, and you don't get to dictate the terms. And there is definitely a truth to that. We are tiny compared to the machinations of everything that's going around upon us. If an asteroid were headed for us and we couldn't stop it, who are we to yell at the universe? Mm-hmm. You know, we got here because of asteroids destroying other things. We got here because of war and pestilence that allowed us to live in the first place. We got here because of the chaos of the universe. Who are we to scream at the chaos of the universe when it affects us? There is something profound in that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, God or random happenings of the mm-hmm. universe, same kind of thing. You don't even say in either way, right?
Right.
At least it's not part where you're like, yeah, I mean, it does fit because, now you said I know the Book of Job. I really don't know it all that well, right? Catholics don't sit around and read the Old Testament right. So well, right? And I've never studied the Bible on my own. But, you know, there's, knowing what I do know of the Old Testament, I doubt that there's the whole, you know, confess your sins and repent and you'll be saved type stuff, right?
Yeah.
There's none of that.
That's not in there.
Yeah. So there is nothing you can do, right? It's like tough shit.
Yeah, and you know, it's obviously anthropomorphized into God and the Christians turn into Satan, but Satan or into the devil, but Satan was just a Jewish word for accuser. It was supposed to be another. I mean, I think originally it was, you know, another god that was speaking to one of the other gods, probably El at the time, who turned into Yahweh. So, if you get into some of that mm-hmm. stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, if you just look at it from the perspective of, look, there's some shit you can't control. So go with it, because that's your best option. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my philosophy. that's kind of the only realistic philosophy you can have. Mm-hmm. And there's something to say for that.
It does. I mean, there's probably something across the eons that allows you to relieve some stress or let off some steam by yelling it.
Yeah.
You know, yelling and imagining that something's there to hear you. Right?
Yeah. When actually you're yelling at if there is something, it does not care.
Right.
It has bigger things going on than you. And that's kind of where the New Testament brings up, because the New Testament says, oh no, you are the most important thing. You are the most important thing. And it's like, come on. Yeah.
Bible study with Greg Weiss.
Indeed. So I mean, that's why I think going to a Bible study can be fascinating. If you even, you know, just from a purely secular perspective, there are good things in the Bible. There are good stories in there. There are things that people discovered about living, about life, that still apply today. Most of it doesn't, but some of it still does.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's all I had.
All right. Hey, we're under an hour still.
Cool.
I would have thought we were way over that.
Well, if we did take some time off, but yeah.